your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
6:20, we're back. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Emily Scarlett. Hey, send us an email. Let us know what you think. Our email address, capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. Any feedback is always appreciated. So, a new report from Lansing's MERS newsletter declaring the state's most liberal and conservative lawmakers for 2011. To talk about who they are and what's ahead in state politics for 2012, I'm joined by Kyle Malin. He's the editor of MERS newsletter. That's MIRSnews.com if you want to check him out online. Welcome to the program, Kyle.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
Now, the way the major votes came down, it seems that there probably were a lot of very close runners up. So who are these two people that are the most liberal and conservative lawmakers?
Well, let's start in the House of Representatives. It should be no surprise that the most conservative lawmaker comes out of West Michigan. This year it's Dave Ajema, who is the sponsor of the bill that the governor just signed, actually, recently, the domestic partnership benefits ban for public entities. He nearly had a perfect rating this year, 95%, and this is based on his vote on 39 select roll call votes in the House of Representatives this year.
I see. These are socially conservative and socially liberal folks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Socially, economically, the whole ball of wax. He gets 95%. He was also the most conservative lawmaker in 2009, too. So this is his second recognition in 3 years. And then the most liberal goes to John Olumba, who is out of Detroit. He's a freshman. He made headlines recently for being the Democrat who was first out of the box criticizing Bob Ficano, the Wayne County executive, for that Takiya Mullen incident in which she received that huge $200,000 golden parachute when she left a Wayne County government to go to the airport. So he was the most liberal, and actually, you know, it has absolutely nothing to do with that incident. You know, we take these roll call votes, we put it into the machine that is the web tool that's supplied to us by MichiganVotes.org, and this is just what it comes out. I mean, we take kind of the votes that you would expect, like the votes on the pension tax or to be more strict with the 48-month limit for welfare recipients, you know, the pension tax. I mean, you know, you name it this year, we put it in the machine, and that's what it came out.
Now, but before we get to the Senate, I do want to ask you, has this year been the most divided and partisan Capitol, at least in the House, that we've seen?
I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I mean, there was definitely a lot of partisan votes. There's no question about it. You know, it did break down, though, that most of the Republicans, or all the Republicans, had a conservative rating over 50%, and all of the Democrats had a liberal rating over 50%. So it was split in that regard. You know, what you end up seeing more often than not, Michael, is a kind of compactness in the middle with the Republicans and the Democrats, and then you get kind of some outliers. For example, in the House, you know, most of the lawmakers for the Republican side were around 76%, 73% more conservative. Then on the Democratic side, it's just exactly the opposite, about 24% conservative ranking for the Democrats, 22% for the Democrats. It's really, you're getting into, when you're starting to talk about most conservative, most liberal, you're really talking about outliers. I mean, strange, kind of strange votes. I mean, let me give you an example. This is the type of vote you need to cast in order to get the most liberal ranking. There was a bill that was introduced that would exempt doctors from a lawsuit if they express some type of apology or some type of condolence to the families of somebody they were working on. This law would say you can't use that apology in a court of law. And, you know, everybody in the House said, well, that sounds reasonable, except for one person, John Olumba, who said that, well, now you're taking something off the table for a plaintiff lawsuit. And so, you know, it's that kind of a vote. I mean, it's a strange vote. You normally wouldn't take that vote. But, I mean, those are the kind of things that you get when you're talking about most liberal, most conservative.
I'm talking to Kyle Malin. He's the editor of MERS newsletter here in Lansing. Okay, Kyle, the two in the Senate then?
Well, you know, in the Senate this year, we had a new batch of lawmakers, which always makes things really interesting. So it's interesting to see the transition from the House to the Senate, where, you know, this year in the Senate, nearly everybody came in fresh and came in from the House. And this year, and the most conservative was Jack Brandenburg. He's a lawmaker out of Macomb County and really kind of fills in the footsteps of Alan Sanborn, who represented that same 11th Senate district for more than, well, actually 10 years for Macomb County. Jack Brandenburg represents the same district. He also gets conservative, the most conservative ranking in the Senate, taking over for where his predecessor took off. Alan Sanborn got it 4 out of the 10 years he was in the Senate. And then the most liberal, we kind of got the same kind of situation. You know, Liz Brader out of Ann Arbor consistently got most liberal. The person who succeeded her in office, Rebecca Warren, was the most liberal in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of strange how that works out. You know, traditions hold true. You know, it would seem like new people come in and you would see, you know, kind of a changing. And in the Senate, we saw the exact same thing. The person who was most conservative part of the state, most liberal, you know, same exact seat. It was really kind of strange.
Well, it sounds like they're representing their constituents at the very least then. So in terms of what we saw this year, this incredible efficiency that the Republicans had in moving legislation, was that mostly due to the Snyder administration tailoring their positions in a way that they knew that legislation would move through? Or did basically the Republicans in the House and Senate follow suit on anything that the governor presented mostly?
Well, I think what we saw, Michael, this year was a lot of coordination with the governor's office, the House, and the Senate. You know, the Republicans had not had a situation where they were in complete control for 8 years. And so, you know, when you finally get complete control back, it's an opportunity. I mean, you see a very small window of opportunity where you can actually, quote, get things done, get your agenda done. And I think what we saw here was a House Speaker in Jace Bolger who was extremely driven and focused. And in the Senate, we had Randy Richardville, who is very experienced in getting legislation through. Even though he's not the most conservative lawmaker you're going to find by any stretch, he's extremely experienced and is very good in getting votes that he needs in order to get legislation through. So you get those two leaders together with Rick Snyder, who also obviously has an agenda coming through and is really extremely effective right out of the chute. You know, the window in which a chief executive, be it a president or a governor, is most effective is typically that first 3 to 6 months where they're still fresh, they still got their ideas, they still got the wind behind them from the election prior, and, you know, everything's just rolling right along. And then as the term chugs along, then you start to see some defeats like we saw this year with the bridge.
Sure.
And then later with the implementation of the Affordable Health Care Act there at the end. And we'll see more of that, I think, as next year begins.
I mean, the governor didn't veto a single bill, right?
Well, he did end up vetoing two bills so far. He vetoed one that was, I don't know, it was kind of more of a territorial bill, to be honest, Michael. I mean, it had to do with the governor's administration cannot craft administrative rules that are more strict than what the federal government hands down. And the reason Snyder vetoed that is like because he said, well, what if I want to do more rules that are more strict than what the federal government does? What if in special cases we need to, and we can't tailor every circumstance to this rigid mold? We need to have some exceptions. So he did veto that one. And then he vetoed a second one. It was the second bill in the domestic partnership benefits package that that took off the table this argument that you can't bring a domestic partnership benefits argument to a bargaining table with union and a public entity. And I think he did that because it was really kind of redundant. I mean, the first bill basically said you can't do it. So why do you need the second bill that says you can't bring it to the bargaining table? I mean, you can't do it. It doesn't really matter.
But he essentially did agree with the premise of the bill of not allowing it. So I see. And look, Kyle, there's so much more to talk about. We barely scratched the surface on what happened in 2011. I definitely will want you on to talk about what we'll see in 2012, because my question is, are these guys going to take a breather, or do you expect them to just continue in this incredible pace? But I will save that question for the next time you're on. Kyle Malin, editor of the MIRS newsletter. That's MIRSnews.com. If you want to check him out online, thank you for joining me.